Good morning. The Tax Committee is going to come to order, and members, we're going to get going just because we have 10 bills to do in 87 minutes, and we're going to do 10 bills in 87 minutes. And members, I know people are just coming in, but we want to just go ahead and get started. Members are off listening to briefings on the forecast, and we understand that the new forecast that has just come out this morning is on members' minds. And so it's kind of hard to get everybody focused on what we're going to do here in the Tax Committee. But due to the time constraints we've got, because session went long on Monday and we didn't get to the Monday bills, we've combined them today. So we're going to be kind of rushing, unfortunately. So what we'd like to do is at least just get started. We want to hear from, if it's all right with Representative Mowery and Representative Murphy, if we could ask them to join us at the table to present their bills now. And I don't want to speak for them. I do think they have about the same bill here. So if I may then, can I make a motion? We don't have a quorum, so we're not going to move the bills yet. But we do want to go ahead and start. Representative Mowery has the lowest number bill here, so we'll start with Representative Mowery describing House File 569 for us. And thank you, Representative Mowery.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Brief review of what happened on this. It was back in 1997, actually my first year here, and that became known as the Brownfields year among the environmental groups and the faith groups and the neighborhood groups for the Twin Cities. And there was a big package of various kinds of Brownfields legislation that was carried that year, and Randy Kelly was the leader in the Senate, and Steve Trimble in the House, and Steve appointed me to in his place because he was too busy with other things. So basically, there was a lot of it ended up with a lot of different pieces of Brownfields legislation passed. By the way, for anybody that's not aware, Brownfields is efforts to clean up polluted land and put it back into economic development. And so then part of that plan was, Dee Long was tax chair at the time, and one of the packages was this piece on raising the mortgage registry tax and the deed tax to pay for cleanups in Ramsey and Hennepin County. And that then passed along with the rest of the Brownfields legislation, but it was a piece that was set to expire in 2003. So in 2002, we put together a bill, and actually I was the one that went around and I got everybody's signature from Hennepin County except two legislators in the House. And as I recall, I believe the bill only extended it for Hennepin County at the time, and then Ramsey County jumped in conference committee, I believe, and came on. So it was extended to 2008. And at the time, we were actually in both parties in 2002 legislation were almost everybody, at least from Hennepin, from each party was willing to put it permanent except the tax chair at the time, who I think you know was pretty strong, said, no, it's going to be a cutoff date on it and an expiration date. And so at this time, we're trying to put it in for permanency.
Thank you, Representative Mowery. And that was a nice background for members to understand kind of how this came to be, so I appreciate that. And I should point out that Murphy has brought candy, and so it's going around the room, so members enjoy that. Do we have a quorum? No, we don't. Okay, did you want Representative Moore, do you have a testifier you want to hear from, or if I would like
we
to
were the, going to use the same, so why?
Okay, so Representative Murphy, welcome to the committee, and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And I did bring candy. I brought Smarties, which are my nephew Seamus's favorite candy, and he takes them before tests. So I thought that was good, and lightsabers, because you have hard work to do, and chocolate, because chocolate's always good. I just want to say what he said, right? That ditto. And I know you're busy, so I'm not going to go through and lay out what this does, other than it does eliminate the sunset on a mortgage and registry deed tax. to be used for the Environmental Response Fund. And I am really pleased to be following in the footsteps of Representative Mullery, and I understand this is also an issue that Commissioner Alice Egan, Representative Alice Egan at the time, has carried in the past. I think there's a clear public need for this effort to clean up brownfields for redevelopment and public use. I think it's very worthy. And if you will, I would just like to turn my time over to the testifiers so they can talk with you about this and the process and the projects that the what they're using those funds for.
Thank you, Representative Murphy, for that, and to the testifiers, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Rosemary Lavin. I'm with Hennepin County Environmental Services. I'm the assistant director there. Hennepin County implemented the Environmental Response Fund in 1997. In 2001, our county board established a grant program for utilization of the funds. Our focus with that was to do grants to municipalities, nonprofits, and developers to do assessment and cleanup of sites that would not normally get funded through other existing funding sources, kind of with a focus on end uses where there would be green space, public use, affordable housing, and smaller scale redevelopment. We are seeking at this time the removal of the sunset date and implementation of this on an ongoing basis. This is a continuation of an existing fund for us, not an increase in Hennepin County. The ERF dollars are leveraged by other private, local, state, and federal funds. No portion of the fund goes toward administrative costs for implementation of the grant program. To date, we've awarded over 130 grants totaling over $16 million. They're spread throughout the county to over half of our municipalities within the county. Projects have included assessment and soil and groundwater cleanup work. We've also done asbestos and lead paint abatement work. End uses of the projects range from residential to mixed use to commercial, industrial, as well as green space. A significant portion of our projects have been residential projects, resulting in quite a benefit in terms of the real estate market and the number of housing units that are available. We've created a number of affordable housing units as well. It can take some time for projects to go from start to completion. We've taken an analysis of about 10% of our grants that we've awarded, looking at the impact of about $1.4 million of ERF dollars. The impact of that for those projects resulted in a $57 million increase in property values, the creation of 200 jobs, as well as the creation of 534 housing units, 300 of which were affordable. The need for the fund continues in Hennepin County. We've got over 3,000 sites of concern with potential environmental issues. Hennepin County is home to over 30% of the voluntary investigation and cleanup sites, 15% of both the petroleum release sites and the dump sites, as well as 25% of our Superfund sites. This program is very significant in that it helps to characterize the potential risks to human health and the environment for these contaminated sites. It assists with the removal of contamination and puts properties back into valued use throughout the county. It creates green space as well as affordable housing for us. It's a very efficiently run program and provides needed assistance to municipalities, nonprofits, and other developers that are trying to work through the complicated process of reclaiming brownfields. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Madam Chair, representatives and authors. My name is Janice Rettman. I'm on the Ramsey County Board. I serve District 3, and I really appreciate the opportunity to be here to ask you to remove the sunset provision on the mortgage and deed tax. On behalf of Ramsey County, I first of all want to thank you, the legislature, for even conceiving of this tool and creating it and then giving us the ability to an opportunity to use this tool to redevelop polluted sites. Ramsey County has taken that vision and created a process that has helped clean up unsightly polluted lands, create jobs, and provide new housing choices. The points I want to stress about our Environmental Response Fund, which we call ERF, are the following. This is not a giveaway or free money. As part of Ramsey County requirements, ERF dollars must be the last to fill the financial gap to clean up the property. All other resources must be secured before the project is approved and funds paid out. Because Ramsey County is a totally urban county, we established an equitable distribution of the dollars throughout the county. The board recognized that funds are collected on sales and registration throughout the county and made a commitment that 50% of the funds would go to the suburban areas and 50% of the funds going to City of St. Paul. Not the City of St. Paul, but St. Paul projects. We have identified at least 2,000 acres of polluted land in Ramsey County, and to this point have been only able to assist in helping clean up 10%. But those 200 acres of clean acres are now generating new property tax dollars, providing jobs and housing. The land being cleaned up would otherwise remain idle. Ramsey County is the only fully developed county in the state. Any new housing must be constructed on infill, and which often requires cleanup. Houses and neighborhoods that are currently located near polluted sites have a lower value than they would if sites were cleaned up and reused, thus benefiting the community and the current property owners. The same can be said for creating good jobs with benefits that help the neighborhood economy, all because we cleaned up the property. By lifting the sunset, Ramsey County will be able to secure federal contamination mitigation funding, and assurance of continued funding puts Ramsey County in an excellent position to provide the local match for U.S. Environmental Protection Agency grants. Denise, Mary Lou, and Nick have already provided you a copy of our IRF highlights, and the bottom line, we would like to be able to continue to use this vital tool by the sunset being removed. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner Rettman. Representative Murphy and Representative Mullery, I don't know that if members want to ask questions, I guess Representative Earhart does, we can get to that. I think then what we want to do, because we still don't have a quorum, is then have you answer questions related to your provisions, and then we'll get Representative Portman and Atkins to join us and tell us about what Anoka and Dakota is looking to do. So with that, Representative Earhart.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I didn't think you were attacking brownfields. These were for smaller areas of pollution. I think I used 16 million on 127 projects. Was that the figure that I heard from? Okay, and that's a pretty sizable chunk. I have a map that shows 30 of those within two blocks of my house, which are much smaller. And that's what I thought these things were for. And so can I have a little more detail on what you're spending this money on? What about the Superfund in another area there? Is this just another source of, I don't know.
Madam Chair, Representative.
Ms. Levin. Yes.
The sites that we're addressing in Hennepin County do range from very small sites, single parcels where there may be one building or one home or whatever there, to larger parcels that are, or multiple parcels where there's more significant contamination. We're addressing the whole range of types of sites. And so we may do assessment work on a site where we're talking about several thousands of dollars to do just preliminary assessment work, up through cleanup that can be hundreds of thousands of dollars in terms of cleaning up the contamination that's there. We are not addressing Superfund sites through this. There's a pool of money through the state that will address Superfund sites. But for us, we're ready to address any sort of contamination that might be there. We have a priority site in our statute that was just cleaned up this past year where that took several millions of dollars to clean that site up because it was significant contamination there. But we're running the full gamut in terms of the possible things.
Let me interrupt. Was there any charge of what size and what type of thing in the statute was passed, or when the law was passed, or are you just running free to do whatever your damn fool please like? That's what it sounds like. I mean, there are a lot of smaller sites that need help. But we're going to have to create more money than you're able to produce for the larger sites, as far as I can see. Excuse me.
Representative Mullery, are you trying to do whatever you are playing,
whatever
please?
Whatever we were accused of getting while running wild, was it?
I don't know.
Quite sure what Representative Earhart, I think he's still upset that I knew what the throwback rule was last week. He stopped me three times in the hallway and asked that. Representative Earhart, no, there wasn't restrictions on that, but it was, there was actually the initial site that was planned was in St. Louis Park, and it was designated as had that park had to be cleaned up before any other park went ahead. And the intent was to accomplish what was best economically for the county, because some small sites are, some large sites are. And the intent of this is not to just to clean it up. It's to go where there can be economic development, and that's the whole point of the brownfields legislation. That's why it's called brownfields legislation and not pollution cleanup or environmental legislation.
Well, Mayor Chair, are you calling this brownfield cleanup?
No.
I thought the brownfields were a different mayor. That's why I'm confused on what we're getting at here.
Well,
Superfund does the brownfields, right?
No.
No?
Lavin?
No.
We do want to take a quick minute to define this, but we do need to get through 10 bills.
Okay.
And we're down to a lot less time. And so what I would suggest, because Representative Coles has a question as well, I want to get that answered so members understand the difference. But I do want, I know Representative Earhart has to leave as well, and, well, we'll take the answer to that question. We'll get to Representative Coles, but we do want to get not too sidetracked, but I think it would be helpful for Ms. Lavin to provide Representative Earhart some more substantive answer to this personally, and particularly address the items he's raised in the city of Edina. Ms. Lavin. Or Representative Mulroy.
First of all, sure. Addressed his question that he thought brownfields is Superfund. That's not what brownfields legislation was about, and I carried some of that. It was to take polluted properties where there's some kind of pollution and it prevents economic development and clean that up so that we could get the economic development on it. And then there's a separate definition of redevelopment, which I can explain to you separately later.
Okay.
Just Representative Earhart, if I may, does that answer your question for now?
Thank you.
Okay, I know Representative Earhart has to leave with Representative Leader to solve the transportation problems in Minnesota, so we wanted to get that answered, and now Representative Colt.
And I'll try to be very brief, Madam Chair, and I'm not sure who the right person to answer this is, probably one of the two witnesses, but can you tell me how much, I wasn't here when this went on, and I wasn't here when the sunset was extended, and to be completely candid, I'm a little concerned about extending or getting rid of the sunset completely. Can you tell me why the sunset was put on in the first place? Was there a policy discussion around why the sunset was put on? That's question number one. Number two, how much has been collected in Hennepin County and then in Ramsey County? And how much has been spent on environmental cleanup as opposed to the other uses that this money can be used for, economic development and whatnot? How much has been used to actually clean up the land versus how much has been used for the other environment or for the other economic development purposes that the statute allows for?
Well, Madam, I don't know if anybody other than D. Long would be able to answer your question why there was an initial expiration date. I was here and I was very involved with all the different brownfield package, but I don't remember the discussion on the expiration date at that time. I do know that because I was the one that got all the signatures on the bill in 2002, almost everyone from your party as well as everyone from my party wanted to go permanent, but as I said, the tax chair at the time didn't want it. So that's the only reason that the rest of the question I'll have to turn over to Whit.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative, The dollars for the ERF go toward assessment and cleanup activities, the environmental activities. The end uses of the sites, whether it's housing, commercial, whatever, that's up to the developer, to the municipality to fund those aspects. So the dollars that we invest in the grant program go toward the environmental concerns there. Was your other question how much the fund is raising? In Hennepin County, currently the fund raises about $3 million per year. In total, since inception, since 1997, it's raised approximately $26 million.
Thank you. The rest of them calls.
So $26 million then has been spent to clean up land?
Madam Chair, Representative, $26 million is what's been raised since the inception, since 1997. Our grant program has been in place since 2001. We've granted just over $16 million so far in terms of the grant program. Actually, at this point, we've had another round, so it's closer to $17 or $18 million at this point that have been granted.
And Madam Chair, what we got a $10 million gap there. Help me understand what's happened with that $10 million.
Madam Chair, Representative, the balance that's currently in the fund is approximately $8 million, just over $8 million. The balance is there for several reasons. We implemented the grant program in 2001. At that time, we set aside some money for the priority site. The statute is very specific in terms of money needs to be spent on that priority site first. So our county board reserved an amount of money for that. That site was actually just cleaned up this past year, and we needed to make sure that we kept some reserve in the fund to deal with any contamination issues that came up with that, so that we would not be in a place where we didn't have a reserve in place for that. Part of the reason for having a balance. Our grant program has also been increasing over time as our municipalities and nonprofits and developers in the county have been getting more familiar with the availability of that fund and the use of that on cleaning up contaminated sites. Our grant program has been growing each year, and we are getting closer to the point then where we will start spending down the balance for that. The other thing is that working on these sites, they need to come to us when they're ready, because cleaning up these contaminated sites is really triggered by redevelopment. We can't just go out and start cleaning up the sites without an end purpose in mind. They need to be cleaned up to different standards, whether it's residential, industrial, commercial, whatever. So we need to wait until they're ready. We've got basically a queue of sites out there that may come to us in the future, and so we're going to be ready for those as the grant programs continue on a biannual basis or twice a year basis.
Madam Chair, final comment. I guess, you know, I'm not just against cleaning up polluted land, but I mean, it sounds to me like Hennepin County has a reserve that's 2.5 years worth of their budget. I mean, if they bring in $3 million a year and they have about $8 million sitting in reserve, I'm not sure why we're extending this permanently or talking about extending it permanently. Maybe it's appropriate, maybe it's not, to, you know, add the sunset out a few more years. But I got a concern, I guess, about if the state of Minnesota was carrying a 2.5 year reserve, I think taxpayers of Minnesota would be concerned about the size of that. I guess I'm not sold yet that this is the right way to go, but I look forward to further discussions as we put the bill together.
Thank you, Representative Coles. And I am going to move, Representative Mueller is going to move House File 569 at this time for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Representative Howell will move House File 1042 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And is there anyone from the public who would like to testify for or against this bill? We really want to get to Representative Portman and Atkins now. Is there any members from the public who would like to address us on these two bills before us? If not, Representative Murphy?
Madam Chair and members, just so that we're fair, in Ramsey County, we're raising about $1 million a year, and there's a waiting list for funding. And I think the project outstanding would cost about $1.3 million. So in Ramsey County, we're raising a little less money, and we're spending it to demonstrate, you know, it's a demonstration, I think, that it's working.
Thank you, Representative
Thank
Murphy.
You.
With that, I will lay over House File 569 for possible inclusion and House File 1042 for possible inclusion. Thank you, authors. And if Representative Portman can join us and Representative Atkins, Representative Tilbury moves House File 362 and Representative Atkins moves House File 1466. Welcome, Representative Portman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill is, the purpose of House File 362 would be to extend this mortgage registry and deed tax to Anoka County as well. We have the same type of situations as Hennepin and Ramsey, where there are polluted sites that need to be cleaned up. The resources aren't there. I know from personal experience that years of litigation have not resulted in the cleanup of some of these sites. People have tried to go after the polluters to make them pay wherever possible, and this tool allows the counties to clean up sites that they have not been able to find a private party to clean up. I have with me today Spencer Pierce from Anoka County Environmental Services, who can speak to the bill.
Welcome, Mr. Pierce.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Spencer Pierce, and I'm manager of the Environmental Services section of Anoka County Community Health and Environmental Services. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of House File 362. If this bill were to become law, I can assure you that this authority would be put to good use. I have with me a map that's been handed out that is shows contaminated sites in Anoka County, and I want to make one statement about it. There's a code on there. The red dots are VIC. VIC is the Voluntary Investigation Cleanup Program. It means that the MPCA is engaged at that site at some level. As early as the 1970s, or as late as the early 1970s, Anoka County was basically rural and undeveloped. It was also used as a dumping ground for businesses located to the south. There are entire sections of property totally devoted to disposal of all types of industrial and commercial waste. Some examples of this problem, in one of the communities in the southern part of the county, we have two separate sites that have been found to be contaminated with chlorinated solvent. One of those sites has had a cleanup in progress for over 15 years. The other site is, the source of the contamination is unknown, it's still being characterized, meaning it's trying to figure out where it came from. Another example is an industrial site that was previously owned by a manufacturing company and now owned by a school district. The same type of chlorinated solvent found on the other sites is on that site. The extent of contamination has been determined, but no cleanup operations have been initiated. The same company has been unable to sell another site or which they relocated because of their history of leaving behind polluted sites. Several large-scale cleanups, and these are primarily Superfund cleanups, have occurred in those programs. Today, the funding for those programs has been diverted primarily to other resources, and from a practical point of view, they don't work on the type of sites we have issues with in our county. The type of program that works to rehabilitate these kind of polluted properties and make them usable, again, has key components. It involves partnership between multiple levels of government, including the state, local, and municipalities, and private interests. This bill requires that matching funds be sought from those very partners. We must have a funding mechanism that's predictable so these partnerships can be made. It also must provide an assurance for the private entity that their liability related to the purchase and development of that previously contaminated property will be limited. I believe this bill provides a framework to effectively and efficiently accomplish all of this, and I urge your positive consideration of this bill.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I appreciate that. Now, I just want to ask you, Mr. Pierce, so really it's Hennepin and Ramsey who sort of dumped their things in Anoka. Is that correct?
I'd like to say that some of the waste came from Carver County.
Okay. I just want to clarify. I noted that, and there's probably, I think, Mr. Pierce, I think there's probably some truth to that when you actually look at the map here and where your sites are. So I appreciate you sharing that with us. And if I may, I'd like to now move to House File 1466 to hear what Representative Atkins would like Dakota County to be able to do.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Well, we can at least proudly say that in Dakota County, we dump our mess in our own county. We didn't go and dump it all over in Anoka and Ramsey and Hennepin. Members, House File 1466 is extremely important to me, to my constituents, and to the folks in Dakota County. And, Madam Chair, I appreciate your graciousness. We put this bill in about 15 minutes ago, and to have it heard already, I appreciate very much. We have 2,400 contaminated sites in Dakota County. The problem with those sites is that they're contaminated, but they don't reach the level where they qualify for some of the other funds that you're familiar with. So we have all these contaminated sites that are predominantly, many of them, in areas that are very developable. You look at former mayors, these are great spots to develop, but they can't be developed because this stands in the way. We're in the business of cleaning up our own backyard. This will give us the opportunity to do that. With that, I do have Commissioner Showalter, Nancy Showalter from the Dakota County Board, who's got some remarks for you as well, and we appreciate your support.
Thank you. Welcome, Commissioner Showalter.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Nancy Showalter, Dakota County Commissioner. As you are aware, in 1997, the state legislature granted both Hennepin and Ramsey counties the authority to impose an additional mortgage and deed tax equal to 1/1,000th of the principal, with the resulting funds dedicated to an environmental response fund. Today, I'm here requesting that same consideration be given to Dakota County. Specifically, the Dakota County Board of Commissioners request Minnesota statutes be amended to extend Dakota County the authority to impose that additional mortgage and deed tax equal to 1/1000th of the principal with the funds dedicated to an environmental response fund. We hope to clean up acquire polluted and contaminated properties with the intent of making them viable for development, recreation, housing, and or transportation. As Representative Atkins mentioned, Dakota County has identified over 2,400 waste sites for cleanup. Some of these sites pose a safety hazard. Some may contaminate our groundwater. Of the 2,400 identified sites, 300 are identified as having greater significance. And a fact sheet and listing of some of the sites is included in your handouts, as well as a map indicating where those sites are located. Finding the responsible parties can be an effort in futility. In many cases, the current property owners are innocent victims whose only involvement was to unknowingly purchase polluted or contaminated property, as in the three sites in which crushed battery casings were used to line septic systems. Some of the various sites, some of the property owners of these various sites are facing cleanup bills from $15,000 to nearly $100,000. If Dakota County had had this authority in 2005, we would have collected over $1 million, $745,000 from mortgage tax and over $395,000 in deed tax. With the market downturn, the 2006 amount was over $800,000 and is still a substantial amount to start the cleanup. Without the passage of this bill, Dakota County would have to rely on our property taxpayers to fund the cleanups of these sites. This would seriously limit the number of sites and our ability to clean up the high number of contaminants that we have found across Dakota County. The two largest counties in Minnesota have already had this authority. Dakota County is the third largest county of the state, and the Dakota County Board of Commissioners respectfully requests the same consideration. I appreciate the time of the committee this morning, and I would entertain any questions you may have at this time.
Thank you, Commissioner. And before the committee asks questions, I want to ask if there's anybody in the public who would like to speak for or against these proposals. Yes. Please join us. And Ms. Jory, you know we're kind of under a big time constraint. I think we suspected the Minnesota Association of Realtors would have something to say about all of these bills. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, for the record, my name is Susan Jory, and I do represent the Minnesota Association of Realtors. I know that you're under a time crunch, so I will just make a couple of brief comments. As you already know, I've testified that we're very concerned about the housing market in general. We know that we've had a lot of buyers buy forward into exotic mortgages, oftentimes entering into one, two, and three different mortgages, so they're paying this mortgage registry tax multiple times. We're very concerned about houses that are tapped out of their equity, so when they go to sell their property, they have less money at the closing table. Obviously, our biggest concern here is that an expansion of the D-tax on a property at a time when it's in a decline is not going to be helpful to buying and selling. We certainly don't oppose cleaning up polluted lands, obviously, but our concern is that this burden not be placed solely on buyers and sellers, that if this is such an important thing, which we do believe it is, to get rid of contaminated property, that we should utilize a broader base than just putting this $800,000 or $1 million just in these particular places to put that burden just on buyers and sellers. So thank you, Madam Chair and members, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Jory. And thank you, Mr. Pearson, Commissioner Schulweiler. Members, questions? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the last testifier would stick around for a minute, my question was to her. And I just wanted to ask you, what kind of general tax increase do the Minnesota Realtors support?
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, we feel that the $53 billion that the legislature has to spend now is sufficient, and that the legislature should prioritize within that $53 billion. So we do not believe that a tax increase is necessary, that the legislature should prioritize. But again, for any major public purpose, we think that a broader progressive tax is the best way to go rather than placing burdens on select few.
Perhaps I'm leaving. Other questions for either Representative Atkins or Representative Hortman? Representative Paulson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This isn't really centered on the fee, but it's just on, you know, I noticed on page 2 of the bill and also on the statute for the Hennepin County provision, in line 2.7. You know, one of the uses of the fund is through the acquisition and purchase or condemnation of lands. And I'm just wondering, you know, how often is that condemnation procedure used, and is that appropriate? I mean, we just passed that eminent domain reform bill last year. Does that mean if a private property owner owns polluted land, that the county can come in and condemn that land from a private property owner?
Good question, Representative Paulson. Representative Atkins or Hortman have a shot. You want to take a shot at that one?
I can try. I don't believe that tool's been used in Dakota County ever. In the event that condemnation, these funds could be used. It doesn't say, I don't believe the intent by any stretch is to go out and start condemning these sites.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Representative Hortman.
Madam Chair, Representative Paulson, since we haven't had this, of course, we haven't used the funds for anything yet, but I'm told that Ramsey County has not used the funds for condemnation.
Well, thank you. Representative Mullery, did you want to Representative Paulson's point?
Hennepin County has never used it, and the representative here thinks that it was because of the, as I said, in the initial legislation, there was a priority for cleaning up one in St. Louis Park, and apparently there was some concern that they might have to use that to clean up the entire amount there, and they've never even considered using it.
Representative Paulson.
Madam Chair, I just think as this goes forward and you think about including this in the omnibus bill, you may want to just eliminate this word or make sure that there's not a creep that goes into place that potentially could erode some of the progress that we passed on a bipartisan basis on the eminent domain legislation. That's all.
Thank you for bringing that to our attention, Representative Paulson. Representative Broad.
Madam Chair, I have the same concern with Representative Paulson, and I am, you know, thinking that if we've never used this in the authority isn't there, Madam Chair, I guess I'd like to strike it out of the bill right now if we could, as opposed to just wait.
Well, Representative Broad, you can certainly get Mr. Michael or someone to draft an amendment for you here while Representative Hortman and Representative Atkins want to address your concern. Representative Hortman.
Madam Chair, Representative Broad, the reason why it's important to have or condemnation in there is to have a tool for absent landowners. These sites usually have a negative value, and they're very difficult for the landowners and the counties to deal with the ownership issues. It's precisely because they have a negative value that the private market doesn't take care of cleaning up the property.
Thank you, Representative Hortman. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Broad. The only thing that I would add is be careful what you wish for. In my experience, 10 years as a mayor, we only used condemnation twice, and we used it as a friendly condemnation. I know you're familiar with that. It was actually to the benefit of the landowner. It had substantial tax benefits for them, and so my suggestion would be that it's going to be laid over in any event for potential inclusion, that we consider it very carefully before we strike it, because I think the same people that you're looking to help might actually be harmed by taking it out.
And thank you for that. You know, thinking about this, we have left now Representative Mullery and Representative Murphy's bills, which have this identical language. So I think maybe the proper place to try to attempt to deal with this is if these bills make it in the omnibus tax bill, we could look at a change there, if that's acceptable to you, Representative Broad. I guess, you know, we would want to get into the public purpose debate as well, because the eminent domain law change did not change the local units of government's ability to do things for a public purpose. And I think you're probably addressing, Representative Paulson and Broad, the kind of private purpose condemnation issue that might arise. And I think it's something that's legitimate, and we probably need to think that through instead of maybe on the fly. And I think the authors are willing. So if you want to proceed, we can. If you would rather wait and kind of address it collectively to even see if these bills advance, we can do it at the point of the omnibus tax bill as well.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, I'm happy to do that as this bill goes forward. I guess my thought was to just continue to highlight it, because I think sometimes we have the language in there and say, well, it's never been used. But at some point, if the language is there, somebody's going to want to use it. So I just wanted to highlight and make sure that we really did do as you're suggesting, to really think it out. You know, we spent a lot of time in, I think, 9 different committees last year talking about eminent domain and condemnation, and I think we should spend some time when we go the other direction as well.
Thank you for that, Representative Fry. Is there anyone else? Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Just a question I think we need to ask ourselves as we consider all of these bills regarding the deed tax mortgage registry is, is it fair for a prospective home buyer to help pay for a contamination caused by commercial industrial development? You know, I think it certainly is fair for a homeowner, prospective homeowner, to help pay up, pay for a landfill because homes have contributed to that. But is it really fair for homeowners to be paying this tax in order to help clean up a commercial or industrial contamination?
Thank you for raising that, Representative Lanning. Are there other questions for the authors? Mm-hmm. Anyone else in the public? If not, I am going to lay over Representative or House File 362 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill and House File 1466 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Atkins and Representative Portman. Thank you, testifiers.
Madam Chair,
appreciate
members,
it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you, members. I know we're sort of clipping here. The most important thing is we want to make sure if anyone is in the public on any of these bills that they can speak to us, because the committee will have multiple opportunities through the omnibus tax bill process to put things in and take things out. So we now want to move to the conformity bills, and I think what I'm going to do is I will ask, this is all right with Representative Paulson. Did he leave? Okay, he's here. Representative Paulson will move, if that's all right. House File 718 for Representative Earhart, who's had to leave to go to a meeting. Representative, that's House File 718. Of course, Representative Simpson moves his own bill, House File 897, and Representative Simpson is also going to move House File 955 for Representative Nornes, who's had to deal with a personal situation, and Representative Simpson will present his bill. We're just going to get them all out here, members. We're going to have Representative Wolfslager move House File 1007 for Representative Bunn, and Representative Wolfslager move House File 1384 for Representative Bunn, and then I will move my own bill, House File 1258. So if we could have Representative Simpson and Bunn join us with Mr. Michael, I think might be the way we can talk about all the federal conformity bills, members. And I think the way we might want to think about this is Representative Earhart has kind of everything that's being contemplated in all these bills. And in fact, he even in his absence has an amendment. And so we're going to pass out that amendment right now. And if we could have the pages pass out that amendment, and I'm going to go ahead and move the amendment, if I can remember the number. I had one. I'll move the A1 amendment to House File 718, and to get that in Representative Earhart's desired form. All in favor of the A1 amendment to House File 718? Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. So now we've got all the bills before us, and what Representative Earhart did there, so we could all discuss this, is Representative Earhart has also introduced conforming the estate tax, which is not in these bills. Mm-hmm. So if Mr. Michael maybe wants to kick it off, if that's okay with Representative Bunn and Representative Simpson, these various bills members are covering the conformity pieces we did the first couple weeks of session on a permanent way. They're addressing the estate tax. They're addressing the expensing section we had a lot of discussion about on the floor, 179. And I think those are all the big pieces. The bill I have, this is the only exception now to all the bills that are being contemplated. The other authors are saying we ought to conform, and we all know in the tax committee those are spending items. I'm actually paying for it with an income tax increase on the top rate. So we're kind of throwing out all the conformity pieces that members are interested in looking at. The bill that I have is the only one that actually pays for it, and we just like a discussion about all the federal conformity items ahead of us. So we're going to go to Mr. Michael, but first, Representative Mallory.
Madam Chair, you said all the federal conformity. As you know, I have a bill that's federal conformity on the pension part of this and the tax. And I talked to you about that before.
I apologize.
It's for fire, police, emergency responders, etc. There's a special provision that they can get a tax deduction for up to $3,000 towards their health care if they're on a special
okay.
plan. And as you said you thought that was
yes,
good.
Yes, Representative Mallory, I apologize, and we will hear yours. another day, and I'm now being reminded as to why it is not in the possession of the tax committee. It is off in another committee.
The pension commission.
Yes, yes. So we don't want to forget that item.
I just didn't want it to be neglected as a federal conformity issue.
I appreciate that. And so I'm certain you will make sure we hear that, and we will have a federal conformity piece in the omnibus tax bill, so we'll be able to discuss it. So with that, if it's all right with the committee and Representative Simpson and Bunn, we're going to have Mr. Michael speak to us about what all the various pieces are in federal conformity here. Mr. Michael.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think probably the easiest thing for me to do is to sort of briefly go through this. In some ways, this is old news to the tax committee because you've gone through this debate in the committee and on the floor when Representative Wolfschlager's bill to conform for tax year 2006 was up. So I think most of you are pretty much familiar with most of the issues that are here. But as the chair indicated, Representative Earhart's bill includes, I believe, all of the pieces that are in each of these other various bills, some of which don't have all of the pieces that he has, and then he has this amendment which adds the estate tax element to it, and so I can briefly discuss that as well. But essentially what these bills do, what Representative Earhart's bill does, and I'm sort of talking in his absence, I guess, is they conform to all of the changes that Congress enacted in the definition of federal taxable income since the legislature adjourned in 2006 on a permanent going forward basis. And there, as I think most of you know, there were those three acts that passed, and this includes probably the biggest one of those is the Pension Protection Act. And then there were also the HEROES Earned Retirement Act and the Tax Relief and Health Care Act of 2006. So that's essentially one piece that's in Representative Earhart's bill. A second piece that Representative Earhart's bill has that also is in Representative Simpson's bill and Representative Nornes's bill is that he conforms retroactively to the Section 179 expensing, and I think probably most of you remember this was discussed in the committee and on the floor extensively. Congress, and I don't know how much of the history you want me to go into on this. It could take a long time if you wanted to go through all of the details. But this is the allowance that allows basically small businesses to, rather than claim cost recovery or depreciation allowances over a number of years, to simply deduct in the year the expense was made or incurred the full amount of the amount up to, for tax year 2006, it was $105,000, I believe, and then it's $108,000 for this year. Or no, excuse me, it was $108,000 for tax year 06, it will be $112,000 for tax year 07. This is indexed. It phases out. So if you make capital investments that exceed a dollar amount and that's indexed as well, then you lose the ability to do it. And that's the way it's sort of targeted to small businesses. And that phase out threshold, again, I think it's $430,000. I'm not sure which year that's for. It's $430,000 for 06 and $450,000 for 07. Congress passed that extension of that dollar amount. The old rule used to be $25,000, so these higher limits would apply, and so we're talking about the difference between $25,000 and $108,000 or $112,000, depending upon the tax year. Congress enacted that in 03 and extended it in 04, I believe. And the legislature in 2005, when it passed the tax bill, decided not to conform to that and enacted a provision that required taxpayers to add back 80% of those amounts and then claim them over the succeeding five tax years. And so that provision's in law. Representative Simpson's bill, Representative Norness's bill, Representative Earhart's bill, and the chair's bill all strike that and conform. Now what that means is because taxpayers are now filing for 06 and adding these amounts back is that some people will have to go back and file amended returns if these provisions are enacted for 06 if they haven't filed already. Now a lot of people claim extensions and don't file until August, and so then they would just file on the right day. So that's the second feature, is the Section 179 expensing. Representative Earhart has a third feature that's not in any other bill, and that relates to the Medicare subsidy. When Congress enacted the prescription drug benefit for Medicare, one feature of that bill included payment of subsidies to some businesses. There are some businesses who provide supplemental pension, prescription drug coverage for people who qualify for Medicare. Usually this is retirees, but it could also be some active employees. Congress did not want them to drop that coverage and when Medicare provided a drug benefit. So to encourage them to continue that, they actually said, if you continue that coverage in place, we'll pay you a subsidy. Now, under normal tax principles, payment of a subsidy is income to that business, or it's a reduced expense, and that's out the same either way. And so Congress, as an additional feature, said, not only will we pay you this subsidy, but you don't have to include it in your income when you compute your federal tax. Minnesota, again, in 2005, when we adopted our federal update bill, said, well, we're not going to conform on that. We're going to require these businesses to add that subsidy back to their income, to their federal taxable income, because we regard that as being income to the business, and we don't need to be, I guess, the policy thought, we don't need to be helping Congress encourage these businesses to not drop their Medicare coverage. Representative Earhart's bill would repeal that add back and conform on that starting for tax year 07, not retroactive. That first took effect in 06. So that's the third piece. The fourth piece is Representative Earhart's amendment, which is the same as a bill that Representative Broad introduced, and that would adopt the higher federal estate tax exemption amounts effective for decedents dying this year. Minnesota, as I think probably most of the members on the committee know, has a $1 million estate tax exemption. The federal exemption now is $2 million. And so what Representative Earhart's bill would in effect do is raise that to the $2 million amount. The Department of Revenue, this is not included in the revenue estimate for Representative Earhart's bill, but I handed out a revenue estimate that the department did in 2006 for the same similar provision that was in the tax bill that was adopted, that was not actually passed by the tax committee last year. So if it's on this amount, and the effective dates are not exactly right, but it gives you an idea of the magnitude of the cost of that. So what the Earhart amendment would do would raise the estate tax exemption immediately from $1 million to $2 million, and in 2009 it would go to $3.5 million, and then in 2010, for 1 year, Minnesota estate tax would disappear. And so that's going to have a cost of about $100 million or something like that per year, whatever the estate tax revenue is. And then under federal law, the estate tax magically reappears in 2011 with a $1 million exemption. And so those are all of the big pieces. Now, if you look on the revenue estimate for Representative Earhart's bill for Representative Bunn's bill or for the chair's bill, you can see sort of some of the details on the individual provisions that are included in this federal legislation, which when Representative Wolschlager's bill was heard earlier this session, we went through much of those that affected tax year 06. I think it's worth highlighting that Another set of changes which were not talked about are these pension provisions, one of which is this provision that Representative Mullery referred to and which would be included in Representative Bunn's bill and the Chair's bill. With the update portion of that, there's a separate portion of it that's sort of a pension law change that's not in it, that's in Representative Mullery's bill, that enables the pension funds in Minnesota to actually make the payments that would enable their retirees to qualify for this new federal benefit. And so that's a feature that will need to pass in order for people to benefit from this new federal change, but that's likely to pass in a separate pension bill, not in the tax bill. The other thing that the federal legislation did was to extend the higher deduction amounts, contribution allowances, for the various retirement plans. So if many of you remember, the IRA maximum, for example, was $2,000, and then in the first, in the 2001 tax bill that Congress passed, which often is referred to as the Bush tax cut bill, those limits were raised to $5,000, for example, for IRAs, and there were similar changes for 401k plans. All of those were done because of federal budget rules on a temporary basis. The Pension Protection Act makes those higher contribution limits permanent. And so that's probably one of the bigger ongoing features that you would want to know about that affects a large number of taxpayers. There's also a number of business provisions on cost recovery allowances and so forth. And, of course, the charitable contribution rules, which we discussed when Representative Walschlager's bill were up. So I don't want to talk for too long, but that's basically sort of a thumbnail of what's in these various bills, and the authors can talk about highlight their, you know, how their bill may differ from Representative Earhart's bill.
Thank you for that, Mr. Michael. And Mr. Michael always makes these very complicated issues sound so easy, and we know they're not. I do want to just mention with Representative Bunn's first bill, for committee to remember this, I believe this was the Paulson Amendment on the floor, is the first bill. So that's just conforming for that second year, if I'm right, Representative Bunn. And if you want to then just tell us a little bit about your two bills, and we'll hear, I think we've kind of covered your first one, and then we'll hear from Representative Sims, and then maybe we'll just go to questions to all the pieces. Representative Bunn.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm here to talk about briefly about these two bills. First of all, she indicated the first one, House File 1007, is really acknowledging the work that Representative Paulson did on the floor. That would just extend the work weather bill to the 2007 year. And we want to acknowledge that was a commendable amendment, but that for the sake of trying to get the House File 8 to the governor, we chose to the majority to vote not to add them in at that time, acknowledging its validity. I first want to say that this is my first testimony as a first-term legislator before a committee. I'm very pleased that it's the Taxes Committee. Tax is so key to what we're all about here as representatives. Also very pleased that both these bills, House File 1007 and 1384, represent two of my core values as a legislator. First of all, that it's about transparency, efficiency, and fairness in government. And secondly, it's about giving tax relief to middle-income families, low-income families, pensioners, the military, etc. Very important for us to have these federal tax compliance so we simplify the lives of our citizens in terms of filing their tax returns. In terms of what this second bill, 1384, accomplishes, it essentially, other than the charitable tightening that was in the Walschlager bill, it essentially follows those same provisions, but extends it to all changes enacted by the federal government from May 18th through December 31st of 2006. Some of these provisions were actually retroactive, a few of them, to 2004 and other years, so it doesn't contain that retroactive component. And it also moves forward to all the categories that you see listed on the Revenue Department's list. The biggest impacts here are in the area of higher education to middle and low-income families receiving credits for tuition paid for higher education for their families, to teachers for classroom expenses, and to that vast category that Mr. Michael mentioned in terms of pension plan adjustments and raising the credits on those. The HEROES effect in terms of our military personnel going out in the future is estimated to be less of an impact in the Warshauger bill for a variety of reasons, but it's still in this bill as well. There are those several pages of categories. I would be happy to take questions or staff on any of those if you have them. But otherwise, I just want to point out that the goal here is to have that conformity to extend the effort of the House File 8 into the future to bring us in full compliance. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bunn. Representative Simpson, would you like to address both your bill and Representative Norness's, and then we'll just open it up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I think Mr. Michaels did an excellent job of explaining what these bills do, and I have an example here of $108,000 I'd like to hand out, and it kind of gives an overview of what this does. And what it actually comes down to in cost, it'll actually break down to a cost of $4,681 for a taxpayer in the current state law. The bill 897 is for tax years 06 and 07 only, and it's effective retroactively to pay for tax year 06, which a lot of our farmers, as you're well aware of, have already filed their taxes by March 1st. And the small businesses will file by April 15th. So if we were to do this, there will be farmers that will have to go back and retroactively reapply to get that credit back. Representative Norness's bill, which is House File 955, does the same thing as mine, except it takes it into it takes it in the out years of 08 and 09. Mm-hmm. So it's 6, 7, 8, and 9. And as you have the, in your packet, you all have the revenue notes that are there, so it kind of self-explains what the dollar amounts are. And I think that, like I said, it's kind of self-explanatory. Going back to what Mr. Michael said, this is part of the 04 federal government decision, and we looked at this in 04 and 05, and we just didn't have the revenue to do it. And that's why it was laid over. And now this year, 2006, is the first year the tax actually takes effect. So when we were looking at it in 04 and 05, we'd have caught it before it would have went into effect. And now it has went into effect. So basically, that's what I have. I know there's I think we have somebody from one of the farm groups that would like to testify on behalf of this. With us today, I believe, and if so, that'd be fine.
Please join us, and if I may, while he's coming down, I failed to add my own amendment to House File 1258, so if I could do that now, and that is to add the H1258A1 amendment to get House File 1258 into the form that I would like it. I'll move that now. All those in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. And members, if I could just ask 1 minute before we hear the testimony, if Mr. Michael could just describe the amendment. I told you all that what I was trying to do in my conformity bill is buy some things here that's in front of us, basically what Representative Bunn is doing and what Representative Simpson is doing. I'm not addressing the estate tax, but instead of saying we should do it, I'm actually paying for it with an income tax increase on the top. Mr. Michael had told me that I could turn that tax increase back off when it's paid for, and that's what that amendment did. So it's a temporary surcharge. Mr. Michael, if you could just describe, having myself not looked at the amendment yet, if you could just describe that amendment so members understand the income tax increase component.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think the Chair accurately describes the amendment. Basically, what the bill did was to raise the top tax rate in steps by an amount that was calculated to offset the reductions in revenue that would result from federal conformity. Now, of course, one of the features of these federal provisions both the 179 and the tuition deduction and the teacher deduction is that Congress has extended them for just 1 or 2 years or 3 years in some cases. And so, in effect, what happens is, as you see, you know, if Congress doesn't extend them and we don't conform, there's a point at which the tax reduction goes away. So what this amendment does is to sort of tie the rate increase on the top rate to the period of time when the federal reductions in the base are in effect. Now, of course, it's interesting to note that the federal minimum wage bill that's now in conference committee in Congress has a further extension of 179, and in fact, one of the versions of that actually increases the allowance. So I think it's, you know, somewhat likely that these things will get extended, but what this amendment does is just to have the tax rate increase go away when the base increase decreases at the federal level go away.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. And if I may, I know Representative Dabney had a question for Mr. Michael. Would you like to ask that now, or should we take the testimony, Representative Dabney?
It's brief, Madam Chair. Okay. If I followed you correctly, Mr. Michael, when you discussed the Earhart bill, you said that it takes the income tax provisions passed by the federal government after we adjourned last year and makes them permanent. And I just wanted confirmation as to whether the federal tax changes are in fact permanent.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, some of them are and some of them are not. But, you know, so for example, the ones, you know, the tuition tax deduction, the teachers, and a number of the cost recovery provisions, Section 179, all of those Congress saw fit to enact them only for differing limited periods of time. And that's why, in fact, you know, the chair's amendment now can essentially have the rate reduction go down and, you know, sort of still be revenue neutral.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the Earhart bill does not conform with the varying provisions in terms of when they turn on and turn off. It simply makes them permanent. Am I understanding that correctly?
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, no. All of these bills sort of essentially say the federal rules will be in effect for Minnesota. And so if Congress were to allow these provisions to expire, you know, then they would expire for Minnesota purposes too.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Thank you.
Thank you for that clarification, Representative Dabney, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kevin Papp. I, with my wife Julie, own and operate a family farm in southwestern Brewer County where we raise corn, soybeans, and boys. I'm also president of the Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation. It's Farm Bureau County Farm Bureau's located and organized in 78 of the Minnesota counties. Minnesota Farm Bureau supports conformity to the IRS Section 179 tax code, the bonus depreciation. You know, this is a great opportunity, and it's really timely. The timing is great today. We've talked a little bit about April 15th and tax day, but I want the committee to realize and appreciate that we are at April 15th for farmers. It's not April 15th, it's March 1st. Is tax days. If you're a farmer or a fisherman, you need to have your taxes in and filed by March 1st. And what we're seeing is some tax preparers that maybe weren't as prepared and weren't as known about this. Certainly those of us in agriculture. Now, the one thing you don't want to do in ag bookkeeping is have to keep two sets of books. And there's really no need to two sets of depreciation schedules, and that's what is required now with this. As was mentioned already, there is a cost to this, over a $4,000 additional cost for that that we're hearing from members. In fact, today we've got our first of our Farm Bureau Day on the Hill. We've got Farm Bureau members from the north, west central, and southeast Minnesota. And even this morning as we were meeting, we're starting to hear about this that we didn't really understand. We knew we had 179, but didn't understand that there was not conformity for this tax year. So on behalf of Minnesota Farm Bureau and other farm groups, we want to make sure that we could have conformity conformity. This would be good for agriculture. This would be good for farmers and ranchers. We appreciate the time. In order to answer any questions, if there are any. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee for the testifier? If not, Representative Colt has a question.
Well, Madam Chair, back to your amendment. I'm sorry. Maybe it's the cold that I have, but I think you said that this turns off after we pay for. But as I read the amendment, I don't see how that happens. And so maybe that's what Mr. Michael explained, and maybe it's just that I'm congested and not following. But is that what you said?
You're congested and not following. Mr. Michael, if you could explain further. Because that is the intention. And members, if I may, just for a second. What I was trying to do, this doesn't have the estate tax in, but it has Representative Bunn's items and Representative Simpson and Nornes and most of Representative Earhart's bill. It was to try to say, you know, one way to accomplish these is make a revenue neutral change in the income tax code. So it was, you know, you're going to pay for income tax mm-hmm. provisions in a revenue neutral way, so the state's not collecting, you know, not getting another dollar to spend, but we're actually going to buy it as opposed to trying to compete off right. against everything else. So Mr. Michael was trying to say, I think, that you can buy it, but then when you're done buying it, you can turn it off. Now, some members would want to keep it going. Some would never want to do it. But if there's a confusion as in the drafting, I'll have Mr. Michael try to answer that because I had not seen it either, so I apologize for that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if you look at the amendment, which is the A1 amendment, the H1258A1, the new language in paragraph B, essentially the first clause, what this paragraph does is say there's for two tax years, for tax year 07 and 08, there will be different top rates that apply. The first clause says the top rate for tax year 07 will be 7.95%. And then the next clause says, in shorthand, for tax year 08, the rate will be 8.05%. Once those two tax years are done,
okay.
then we go back to the regular statute, which says then the 7.85 top rate applies.
Now it's clear even to my congested head, Madam Chair. Thank you. Or Mr. Chair.
Representative Holt, did you have your question answered?
Clear as mud.
Sounds good. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of a follow-up question that I can ask Representative Lancheski later, but perhaps Mr. Michael can help clarify this for me. Would there be any way in which we can calculate the tax savings for different examples of taxpayers under the conformity in the Lancheski bill versus the cost to those same taxpayers? Does it end up being a wash for these years until we've bought it back, or is there no way to really figure that out?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, essentially what her bill with the amendment is designed to do is for the whole universe of taxpayers is intended to be revenue neutral. Obviously, there will be winners and losers when you look at individual taxpayers. For someone who takes the maximum 179 deduction, for example, will be a winner. Anybody who get benefits from some other provision and doesn't have enough income to be into the top rate will also be a winner. On the other hand, if you're a taxpayer who has a substantial amount of income in the top bracket and don't benefit from any of these provisions, you don't have any 179.99 depreciation, for example, you don't have the tuition deduction or something like that, you will be a loser. But she designed the bill so that the whole aggregate of all taxpayers sort of would come out, equal. And we could calculate some examples to show that, and obviously you could make them look sort of as extreme or, you know, within limits as to the effect. I mean, I suppose an extreme example would be someone who has, you know, several million dollars of income I mean, there are a few examples like that, and doesn't have any of these other, you know, any of the beneficial provisions under the bill. They would, you know, pay, you know, quite a bit more and wouldn't realize a benefit.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Michael, for that very good explanation. The follow-up would there be any way of determining whether or not there'd be more winners than losers or vice versa?
Mr. Michael.
Well, one of the, Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, one of the difficulties that we have is that our computer model does not have all of these data items. In general, our computer model will print out winners and losers, but you have to actually, you know, have the tax return amounts in it, and some of these, I'm not sure that we do. So I think, you know, if we did something like that, it would be subject to a fair, you know, degree of error.
Ms. Manzi, did you want to add?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lanning, what we can do, I mean, the gross thing we can do by looking at the revenue estimates is figure out the number of people who benefit under the conformity provisions and then figure out the number of people who would pay under the rate increase provision. So we can start with that. But as Mr. Michael noted, we won't have the level of detail needed to figure out the number for each provision until we get our tax year 2006 sample of income tax returns, which will be in 2008. And even when we have it, we still won't know. With some of the pension provisions, for instance, we will know how many people claimed what at the time is the maximum IRA contribution amount, but that's being phased up, and so we won't know how many will go on to contribute more and claim the maximum contribution deduction in the year for which it's being extended. And likewise, with the charitable contribution provisions in the federal bills, we don't have the level of detail to know how many people are claiming less because they had a taxidermy contribution expense or some other thing. We just know the really gross numbers for the charitable contributions. So we can tell you how many there are who benefit and how many there are who pay, but it's hard to put the two together.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you.
Representative Simpson, other questions? Otherwise, I see we do have an additional testifier.
Yes, our testifier, please.
Please state your name. And
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Appitz. I'm with the law firm of Messerly and Kramer. I'm here on behalf of Farm Credit Services, which is an agricultural lender nationwide here in the state of Minnesota. And sitting before this committee, I am definitely a fish out of water. So your patience, I appreciate. Very quickly, on behalf of the member borrowers of Farm Credit Services, we want to endorse the three bills that are being considered right here on the Section 179 provisions. They are of consequence for a variety of reasons. Most particularly, Minnesota didn't have a chance to conform to these. This gives you that opportunity. And consistency between federal law and state law is going to make it for Minnesota producers both a benefit in terms of the flexibility they will have. As you know, agricultural producers can have significant variances in their income, and a provision like this allows them in the good years to take advantage of the need to replace equipment, the need to replace tractors, combines, etc., like that, and offset some of this cost early. It comes back later on, but offset some of this cost early. Consistency also will help reduce costs. It is no small matter to prepare the income tax return for any of us, but certainly for an agricultural producer, the record keeping and the difference in the accounting and the state and federal levels can be offset by making these provisions consistent. And finally, we've got taxpayers who do their own taxes still, and this is a trap for the unwary, definitely. Having inconsistencies out here of this nature in this refined area can create problems for people who might otherwise just not be aware of the fact that there is a difference. And if you change tax accountants, oftentimes those records don't carry from one to another, and you can create a problem of an inconsistency where something was taken previously and not otherwise. That all said, there's just good reasons in terms of consistency to carry this over. One of our associations down in southern Minnesota, AgStar, does tax returns for about 3,700 of its borrowers. They figure about 8 to 10% of these folks would probably take advantage of the conformity that your bill would bring forward. And so we just encourage you to move those provisions forward and conform with the federal law. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Appetz? If not at this time, thank you. Is there anyone from the audience who would care to speak for or against any of these federal conformity bills? Please come forward, sir. Good morning, and please state your name for the committee.
All right, Mr. Chair, my name is Todd Koch. I'm a CPA with John A. Knutson & Company, a CPA firm in Falcon Heights. I'm also a member of the Minnesota Society of CPAs. The Section 179 expense is really important to my client base. I don't represent people like Northwest Airlines and 3M. I represent small business owners. And the prior person testified was talking about 8 to 12% of his people take advantage of this provision. In my client base of my corporations, be they traditional C corporations where they pay the tax, or the S corporations, the small business corporations, 42% of my clients take advantage of this. I'm probably the only person here saying, I want to be paid less. My clients don't want to pay me to keep track of all these differences. They'd rather have me do other things. And since the cost of tax compliance is, in essence, a tax increase, I'm asking you to give them a tax decrease by decreasing the cost of compliance, by not having to pay me to keep track of these things, as I said, to worry about moving between clients, between preparers, and have all those things move across. When the federal bill was up at $100,000, and unfortunately the way the federal does things, they put things in, take them off, put them back in, so we were at the much higher limit for a number of years. Then we couldn't, for reasons, come back to the higher limit now. I'm just asking that you move forward with the higher limit. I also would ask one other thing. Rather than going backwards for 2006, maybe consider doing 2007 and forward. The reason I'm asking for that is most of the 2006 returns will be completed before this is passed. The number of clients that are going to have to file amended returns is huge, because not only are they filing amended corporate returns, most of the corporations are S corporations. So you amend the corporate return or the partnership return, that flows down to all the various individual returns. The cost to the taxpayers and the Minnesota Department of Revenue would be very large. So, yes, I love tax decreases as well as anyone else does, too. But we want to be prudent with people's money. We want to be prudent as things move forward. So whatever we can do to conform, I would appreciate. But also keep in mind that maybe doing it 07 and forward would be very much appreciated.
Thank you, Mr. Cope, for those comments. Any questions for the testifier? Yep, Representative Borschlager.
Chair members, Mr. Colt, thank you for a logical, practical explanation. Thanks.
Any other questions? Representative?
Mr. Chair, maybe for Mr. Michael, if we did this just for 07 going forward, is there a way we could provide, is there something in between? I mean, can we give people a credit for what they overpaid in 06 so they don't have to file an amended return?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chair, Representative Coles, yes, I think one of the things that Ms. Manzi and I had talked about was the possibility of allowing taxpayers to, well, let me back up and say the attraction of doing it retroactive is that you avoid this phenomenon of keeping separate books going forward. The disadvantage is the point that Mr. Koch made about triggering lots of amended returns, which is undesirable. Another approach would be to allow taxpayers to claim the amount that they were added back in tax year 06 and 07. And so that would be a way to sort of get rid of the carrying a different set of books. Now, the phenomenon that you will find, though, is that as Mr. Apitz testified to, there are some, and particularly in the farm sector, that have very volatile income, and you may very well end up giving them a deduction in a year where it's of little or no benefit to them, and based on my experience, we'll hear from them.
Any other questions for the testifier? Thank you very much. Anyone else from the audience that would care to testify on any of these federal conformity bills? If not, any other comments from the members? Any last words from the authors of the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just think that this is the type of policy that we as a tax committee need to look at. This is good tax policy, and these are the things that, you know, we look at every year in this committee, and I appreciate Representative Lincheski taking the time to listen to these today, and yeah. I'm confident she'll be looking at them in the final bill. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bunn?
I also just thank you for your time and consideration. This has been a good conversation on these points. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The Chair will lay over House Files 718, 897, 955, 1007, 1384, and 1258 for possible inclusion into the tax omnibus bill. We have minutes to approve the February 27th minutes. Do I hear a motion to that effect?
So
Representative Lanning moves to approve the February 27th, 2007 minutes. All those in any discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. Thank you for all the discussion on those items, and thank you, staff. We are adjourned.